Filmmakers have often tackled serious social issues in comedy before they dealt with them in drama. A new series at the Museum of Modern Art called Cruel and Unusual Comedy reveals that there was a wide range of social commentary surprisingly early in silent-era American slapstick films. It runs tomorrow through June 1st, and it's been organized by film historians Steve Massa and Ben Model. Did I put it model?
Modell.
Modell? They miswrote it here. They wrote Modell.
Oh, that's so okay. There should be two L's, but I mean, the second L is invisible, that's all. So pretend there's another L.
It's written like model, but it's Modell.
Yes, exactly.
And Mr. Modell was actually playing the piano that we were just listening to because he is an accompanist as well. You've probably seen him at the piano at MoMA at one time or another over the past 25 years. And I'm delighted to welcome both gentlemen to the show today. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Were you surprised by how many early serious topics like race riots and gratuitous violence were being addressed in silent films?
I don't know if we were surprised, but so much as we started to look at these films, we just being fans in general over the past several years, we discovered that it's really, humor has always been sort of an escape valve for society. And you can, look at these films as just slapstick comedies, but they're also evidence of how we dealt with things that we were afraid of and that sort of thing.
And when did this begin? In the early teens?
I guess, the slapstick comedy really started in the aughts, late aughts.
Sure,
really.
Well, and also the antecedents come from the stage, from minstrel shows and vaudeville, and probably go all the way back to the Commedia dell'arte.
Yeah, and circus arts. I mean, this was sort of a staple of vaudeville, and then when motion pictures came around, it just got translated into film.
Sort of characters has become archetypes, and it's sort of a visual shorthand in a way.
Plus, with film, in a vaudeville act, if you break something, you have to be able to do that over and over. And in a film, you could throw people into the lake and drive cars off cliffs and do all sorts of things you couldn't do in a theater.
Where did you find these films? Are they all in the museum's collection?
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we've spent, maybe the last 6 years?
6 or 7, yeah. It was when we started looking at films from MoMA's collection when we were planning the Roscoe Arbuckle retrospective that was done in 2006.
And he shows up, Fatty Arbuckle.
He does show up. And we would fill out screening time with other films. And MoMA has been preserving these things for decades.
So while you were looking at these films for other reasons, it occurred to you that it was dealing with these big themes?
And we started noticing, and especially repetition of certain themes and the way, black people were treated and handled, the image of black people and
animals and kids and
sexual issues. It's much more innocent, having men in drag is really just because it's funny.
But that's something that has been with us always, hasn't
forever,
it?
I mean,
Milton Berle and Some Like It Hot. It goes all the way back to early films.
Even further back.
You call it cross-dressing, but there's a big difference between cross-dressing and drag, isn't there?
Well, it depends. I think that as a stage convention, back when, 100 years ago, it was just to be silly, just to be funny, whereas it's more of a statement when it's done today. I think that's the big difference. But it's been, it's been around for a long time.
Long time.
We have Wallace Beery in 1914 in Sweetie Learns to Swim. Yeah. He also directed it?
We think so. He directed many of that series. This one, it's usually credited to him.
And what's unusual is that he plays a woman throughout the film. He's not a man who puts on a dress as a disguise. The whole series of films, these Sweetie films, he plays a woman in that.
And that's how he made his first name in films was this
like
Sweetie
Tyler Perry.
Series.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You have two Stan Laurel films, and one of them he also directed.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
And I didn't know he ever did drag films.
Oh, he actually, it's some of the Laurel and Hardy films he ends up in drag. There's one called That's My Wife, where Ollie's wife leaves and the rich uncle comes and he wants to see the wife and he's going to give them money. And so then Stan has to dress up as Ollie's
something
wife.
Something he does, and there's a film where Stan and Ollie play each other's wives.
Was he a good director, Stan Laurel?
Yeah, he's a great comedy creator as well. And the one that we're showing that he directed was during a period when he was off camera and was working as a writer and director at Hal Roach.
You know, it's also a treat to see Roscoe Arbuckle and Buster Keaton together. They did a number of films together, but this one is called Goodnight Nurse.
Yes.
And it's almost surreal.
It's very surreal. It's probably one of Arbuckle's funniest short films. And the two of them, you can see, you know, it's in the 3 years that Buster was working with Roscoe, he's still not locked in his sort of deadpan persona, and you can see how much fun he's having, you know, with his sort of slapstick ballets and just goofing around with Roscoe in the different scenes.
And these are all shorts. On May 20th, you're doing all of these films, these shorts about men in drag.
Exactly.
That's right.
And then the 27th, you're doing a group that you've called Race Riots.
Yes, and that's all the images of the black characters or black performers.
Yeah. And some negative stereotypes and some in the other direction. We're showing a gorgeous 35mm print that MoMA has done recently of a film starring Burt Williams, who's the Ziegfeld star.
Natural Born Gambler.
Yes.
And it's pretty easy when you see him to understand why he became a star and why he was hard to stereotype.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And he's perfect for film, too, because he underplayed so much on stage.
It's wonderful.
You know, the accounts are just a shrug or just a look. And you know, on film, it's captured perfectly.
Yeah.
He does his pantomime poker game.
Yeah. So why did his career end so early?
Well, part of the issue, as far as films he was working, these were comedies made for Biograph, and Biograph was on its last legs at the time. And actually, there was an unfinished feature in production that MoMA has the material on. They're trying to assemble it. We don't even know what it was for, who the audience was for, and because Biograph just sort of ran out of steam, it just stopped, and he returned to the stage.
And he was working for Flo Ziegfeld. And Ziegfeld wasn't happy about his comedians moonlighting in films because W.C. Fields was doing the same thing. He made a couple of shorts in Flushing. And Ziegfeld put the kibosh on Fields's, so I'm sure he may have done the same thing with Burt Williams.
And then Burt Williams died rather young, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he died in 1921 or 22.
But he had been on stage and a recording star for many years before that.
Now, you said that there were also negative stereotypes.
Sure.
And should I assume that most of the films that we have here are of that sort?
On the racial humor program, I'd say maybe a majority of it is. But the thing that what's happened, 70, 80 years later, is that the stereotype of an African American man being easily frightened, it's hard even to understand where that might have come from. Because it's so far removed from today's society.
And we have a film like that. Ernest Frederick Morrison, otherwise known as Sunshine Sammy in Haunted Spooks from 1920. Now, he was one of the rare black silent film stars, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hal Roach?
He may be really the only black silent film star. He was the first to be on a long-term contract with Hal Roach.
And he was a kid.
He was in the Our Gang comedy.
They built the Our Gang around him, actually. That was Roach wanted to star him, so they built Our Gang around Sammy. And I think the reason it was he became sort of the only really black silent star is because he was a child, so he wasn't threatening to white audiences, per se. Yeah. You know,
and he often winds up being Harold Lloyd's ally in the shorts, as is the case in Haunted Spooks, even though the film is full of other stereotypes.
My guests are Steve Massa and Ben Modell, and we're talking about a series that is opening at the Museum of Modern Art called Cruel and Unusual Comedy, Social Commentary in American Slapstick Film. It runs Wednesday at 4 p.m. on the 20th, and then Friday the 29th, and then Monday, June 1st, all at the Museum of Modern Art. There's an additional 7 p.m. show on gratuitous violence on May 27th. And Ben, will you be playing for all of these shows?
Yes, I'll be playing piano for all five shows.
So you've seen them all. You kind of know where the jokes are.
Exactly.
How have these comedies aged? Will they still make contemporary audiences laugh?
Oh, yeah. We actually presented the same five programs as a class held through MoMA's Education Department in November and December, and the films played really well. And Steve and I have seen these films with an audience over the years, and they hold up extremely well.
Although the notion of death in the electric chair might not strike most people as funny today.
Well, yeah, but nobody actually dies in the film. It's just
their first
Ford
execution.
Sterling grimacing
very absurd.
This surreal electric chair with sparklers, you know.
It's like an animated cartoon, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so surreal. Many of the shorts in the gratuitous violence program are just so extreme. It's absurdity.
Yeah. And because they're silent films, it's hard, you know, you don't take them as seriously as this sort
it's
of just outrageous in a John Waters sort of sense, you know.
Mm. And I assume that there was some kind of a dialogue going on between early animated films and these films.
Sure.
As to the kinds of things that they would make fun of. There's one called The Phony Cannibal from 1915.
Yeah. And that's a Ham and Bud comedy. And that's all. Yeah, they're really almost out of Waiting for Godot, those two characters. And there's just anything for a laugh, and any way to hurt somebody else, just for a laugh.
You mentioned animals before, and you also mentioned W.C. Fields. Mm-hmm. I don't think of them going together. Didn't W.C. Fields hate animals because upstaged him often?
That's the story, right?
That's the story.
Any man who hates dogs and children can't be all bad,
that's what
I think
said,
is a quote, whether he really said it or not.
I don't know, yeah.
But you have a whole bunch of things, including films with elephants, monkeys, lions. Where did they get access to those animals?
You know, in silent films, there's tons of animals and animal stars, dogs and cats. Brownie the Wonder Dog, Pal the Dog, we're showing.
Cat, Dog, and Company, you say, is one of the oddest films in the whole series.
Yeah,
it's very surreal. It's an arrogant short.
Nightmare sequence where Weezer is put on trial because he's been picking on animals.
Mostly
and he's
chickens.
Put on trial by these giant animals.
And these giant chickens peck away at him and chase him around and...
It's very bizarre.
And a lot of the silent Eric Gang shorts have a very surreal air to them anyway.
Well, we use the word surreal here. Now, surrealism hadn't even been invented at the time.
Yeah.
Are we talking about fantasy, or are we talking about something that really is like a dream in
sort
a film?
Sort of both. We can look back on it and say it's surreal. But these were just, with silent comedies, you really... Because of the silence and the added speed and the black and white, you could really do a lot of different things and create this whole universe.
You say that Mind the Baby was at the top of your list when you were assembling program themes.
Yeah, well, it's pretty out there. There's an alligator and a dog and a toddler.
In real scenes together.
Yeah.
There aren't any special effects. You see the baby being dragged around by this alligator and the dog biting the alligator on the tail trying to protect the baby and all in one shot.
There's some of the humor, at least today, it's just out of the fact that you just can't believe what you're seeing. You know, and
someone would let their baby actually do this scene
with an alligator.
Live alligator, whether its mouth is wired shut or not.
Yeah, it's pretty out there.
Your Machine Age program on June 1st is subtitled Max Sennett versus Henry Ford.
Yeah.
Versus. So who comes out the winner in the end?
I think Max Sennett.
Probably Max Sennett. And this was a concept. This is when we did the class, our guest speaker was Eileen Bowser, who was the head of the film department for many years. And it was really her initiative that a lot of these slapstick comedies got preserved. At moments, so the program is about the assembly line technique that Sennett himself employed, and also the use of automobiles and
destruction of automobiles.
Yeah, automobiles were still pretty new in the teens and twenties.
And they were already crashing them.
Crashing them, and just there were so many gags about people having to get out of their car and repair it. You were sort of expected to not only be able to drive it, but to go under the hood and work with it.
Well, Get Out and Get Under is a good example because it's really a status symbol for Harold Lloyd. It's his new car, and, you know, he's so proud of it, but it gives him nothing but trouble
exactly.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you went through the collection to do some other series.
Yes.
Have you seen pretty much everything now?
No, there are hundreds and hundreds of slapstick comedies, and we've been looking at these, like Steve said, for the last several years, and there's... several hundred more that we haven't even gotten to yet, and there are things that we couldn't fit on this program. But what we're looking to do, hopefully, is do more of these shows because there's plenty more to show.
What I'm hoping for is that there are more DVDs made of these.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I have a Roscoe Arbuckle, I have Buster Keaton's, I have some other things at home, and it's amazing how great they are still. Fatty Arbuckle had to have been one of the greatest physical comedians that ever lived.
He's amazing.
Oh, he's great, and he was an excellent director as well.
Yeah.
You know, just great all-around comedy creator.
Yeah, well, there is a DVD set of early Charlie Chase comedies coming out in this summer that I did some scoring on. So there's one to put on your
and
on
we
your
did
list.
Commentary
yeah.
tracks.
Yeah,
for.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, the series starts tomorrow.
Absolutely, tomorrow at 4:00.
Wow, I can't wait.
Yeah, neither can I.
Well, you'll be playing. You'll be working.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we'll introduce the shows as well.
And Steve, you'll be
I'll
just
be there.
Introducing
we'll be
the shows.
Introducing and all the shows. We have to put things into proper context, you know, yeah. because of some of the subjects.
Yeah, and we have online film notes posted at coolandunusualcomedy.info for more information.
Well, if people have not been taking notes on all of this because we've been going rather fast, we have a complete schedule of the series and information about the tickets on our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to Steve Massa and Ben Modell for talking with us today.
Well, thanks for
having
us.
Thank you.
See you at the movies.